Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
Everybody, how's everybody's weekend?
Oh man, writing, busy as usual. How was yours?
It was good. Yeah, busy as usual. How about you, Miss Tony?
Hey everybody, I am excited to be on here tonight, and my weekend was busy as usual also.
the usual Miss Tony thing, cooking,
yeah.
Chasing
yeah.
behind those grown folks, let
yeah,
you talk
yeah. I'm the shortest thing in the house, but I got the tallest, the biggest mouth, I'd say.
You ain't playing with them like that, huh? You said you're going to be the boss in this castle. Tell Mr. step in the room, then Tony sit down for about 2 seconds.
That's it. You know, my son is always trying to, like, because he's the tallest thing in the house at 6'5", right?
Wow.
He always seem to have one to have the last word, but I go stand next to him and I say, "Now, what did you say, boy?"
Oh shoot! You were like, "Well, see, what had happened was what I was saying. I'm going to just go ahead and sit down. You know, I'm not even messing with you like that, woman."
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, D-Lo, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, ladies?
D-Lo.
How y'all doing?
Good. With her hand on her hip, get low. Yeah,
what's going on?
Oh man, we missing you. What's up, Aaron?
I'm chilling. I'm over here thinking of a master plan.
Oh, ain't nothing but sweat inside your hand.
Yep. That's about it.
That's about it. That's what happened.
Yeah, sweat beats lint.
That's the truth. Well, tonight we're having a special edition of Writing Royalty Radio. We had the real Rick Ross, Ray Rick Ross from out the West Coast. A lot of people have made a lot of controversy over the name, the man, the myth, the legend. Tonight, Writing Royalty Radio sits down with him, and we talk about the man behind the pen, because now he also writes. He was the man behind the pen walls for a lot of years, but he was able to turn things around, and now he's using his voice as well as his pen, figuratively as well as literally, to be able to bring literacy to the community. And he has some great big projects cooking, and I can't wait to get him in here and discuss his journey, how he was able to change around the persona and, you know, the different legends and things that were out about him. And he's going to get in the clubhouse and he's going to tell us about those new things. And I'm excited. How you feeling, Aaron?
Definitely excited. I mean, it's a great opportunity to be able to speak to this man. You know, everybody knows his story. The saga continues. He's about to come back, let us know what's going on new with
mm-hmm.
him, how he transitioned his life and what he got going on now. You know what I mean?
Right.
History still being written in a different ink. So it's all love, man.
Yes, I'm excited. And to see a person come and rise up like a phoenix, as they would say, you know, from someone who people look at as, you know, a degenerate or, you know, bad to society. And then they are able to change all of that around and now share their journey and have a whole new mission in sight, using their influence to take it to a whole other level, to support literacy and reading and art. So that's going to be phenomenal. I can't wait to hear what he has to say about what he's doing to bring these things to fruition. Miss Tony?
Yes, ma'am. I've got to officially welcome this, open up this show.
Yes, pay those bills.
Pay the bills. This is a Tuesday night edition, so that's a special edition for everyone. So I hope you guys get prepared for this great show we have with Rick Ross. Writer Royalty Radio is dedicated to joining authors and readers together, creating a community of reading and writing greatness. My name is Tony. I am one of your fabulous co-hosts. And a little bit about me, just a little bit, because we have a big show ahead. I am an avid reader. I love everything associated with reading. The word is just, it's a powerful thing to have in your arsenal, being able to read and enjoying what you're reading. But just a little bit about one of my co-hosts, Nene Capri. She is an avid writer. I love everything her pen spits out. She has a things that you may want to hop over to Amazon or your local bookstore to pick up. She has a PCAP series 1, 2, and 3, and I cannot wait, Nene, until you spit out number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Just can't wait. You've just been teasing us, girl. You're teasing us. I'm ready for it. I am ready.
Yes, it's going down.
And she also has the Trust No B series 1, 2, and 3. That's a classic that I hope whoever hasn't had gotten that into the library, please get it in quick. And she shares that title with the one and only Cash Streetlit author. That's an all-time classic. You just got to get that into your library. Now, Under Jew Street, Ms. Capri has Tainted, Lies, Fear, and Death. And she's penning part 2, another one we're anticipating from Ms. Capri.
Mm-hmm.
Busy over there, girl.
Oh, my goodness. They try to take me down, Tony, but I ain't going to let it happen. I'm going to get these characters.
They all in your head trying to vie for space, right?
Violation, yes.
Now, my co-host, Aaron Bebo, he is no slouch in his pen. Some of his great works that are Rat Hunters. That was my introduction to Bebo, actually. Change for a Dollar Until My Casket Drops. And also Under G Street, which is a powerhouse, if you haven't heard. My all-time favorite hip-hop, I Used to Love Her. And Mr. Bebo is taking part 2 of that. Am I not right, Mr. Bebo?
Yes. It's in the works right now as we speak. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be way hotter than... I'm going to show you how you put a part 2 out. I'm just really give them a
all
part
right,
2.
Now. You heard it right from the director's lips. Now, he has Boo Thang. Is that still available for 99 cents?
Yes, it is.
All right. Get over there to Amazon and one-click that. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to my wonderful co-host, Miss Leisha. How you doing this Tuesday evening, girl?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you asked Aaron about Boo Thang, because somebody inboxed me, and I told them, he was getting ready to pull it. I'm not sure. Let me find out, and I will contact you back so now I can let them know that it is still up and running, and it's 99 cents. So thank you for asking him that, because I sure needed to know that.
You're welcome.
And for all those that don't know who I am, I'm Leisha. I'm an avid reader as well. I'm also the head of Writing Royalty Promotions and the head promoter for author Nene Capri and Boss Lady Publishing as well. I always keep people informed on what to one-click on. We have some hot reads. I think I'm going to say between March and now, it's been nothing but hot books coming out. Every time you turn around, somebody dropped in some books. Sometimes they dropped in two. So it's been a very interesting spring and summer for all readers. I want to remind you guys to make sure you one-click on that. And Then There Was None by Clay Thomas Williams. And then from Tanya Robinson, they're Stuck on Pause. As well as Swift, Motivation, Mastering the Game, that is currently 99 cents, on Amazon. Super excited. We have a wonderful show for you today. So, Bebo, did you cook?
Yeah, definitely. Salmon and rice. It was marvelous.
Well, I see God. Everything's grown. So we're going to let him have that. I know Miss Tony probably smoked something. She had something in the little machine or something. What did you do tonight, Miss Tony? Because
Tonight I had 5 minutes to get on the show because I'm back at work today, unfortunately. Unfortunately, I'm happy to have a job to go to.
I'm happy you have a job, yes.
Exactly. My family's sitting here looking like, what's the dinner, Mom?
Mm-hmm. They looking at you. They going to be peanut butter and jelly tonight. You say, hey, I'm going to talk to Rick Ross. There's no eating this evening for you people.
Not until after 9 o'clock.
And sit down. Drink a cup of water and sit down.
Tony done threw something in the pressure cooker. She like, don't worry about it. I got everything right on schedule.
We going to go back to that pressure cooker. You and Leisha had me crying.
Leisha, I don't know what's wrong with Leisha. She's trying to go
I'm glad Miss Tony hit me to that pressure cooker. She hit me to the pressure cooker, and when my mom came for my graduation last month, she asked me what I wanted, and I said, oh, Mommy, I want a pressure cooker, just like that. You know, you call your mommy.
I know.
When you want something.
Aaron, did you hear that? Did you hear that,
hey,
Aaron?
Listen, I already know.
Did you hear that, Aaron?
Already know.
When you want something from your mama, you know. Y'all know when y'all want something from your mama, y'all say mommy.
Mm-hmm.
Or mom.
I don't think. I think we might have outgrew that little zone right there. We probably giving out the gifts now.
Well, shoot, I got me a pressure cooker.
What else we got on deck? I know we also have another fabulous guest on deck. Please give us a little bit about her.
Absolutely. We actually have two authors today. Rick Ross, he co-wrote the book with Kathy Scott,
mm-hmm.
who is a crime I don't even want to say crime fiction, but she's a crime author. She's written tons and tons of books. I mean, tons of them. So what I did, because you guys know when I push the show, I always push the author's Amazon and Barnes & Noble links so you guys can one click. So what I did was I just copied her link for her author page. So when you click the link under each author, you'll get every book that they wrote. And the other book that I put on there, that third book, that's Gary Webb's book. And Gary Webb is actually the journalist that we will hear about later on in the show. But he actually wrote a book, which was kind of involved in some of the controversy. So I put that on there as well, because you may have some people that want to read that as well.
Okay.
So all
okay.
of those authors' works are on that link.
Okay. Phenomenal.
And everybody can one click.
Okay, great. That's going to be good. You always want the readers to find out something new, innovative, interesting, things outside of urban literature that the readers can sink their teeth into and enjoy. With the summer, people are vacationing and, you know, traveling around. So definitely, definitely always check the Writing Royalty sites and blogs, as well as Boss Lady, and follow, you know, Aaron Bebo, Nina Capri, and Tony Doe, so that you can find out what's up and coming and new. Leisha Sadler posts every day great reads and links to different books so that you can fill your summer going on into your fall and your winter season with great reads in your library. And I'm really, really excited about that. We found out that Mr. Ross also has music and things that he does for literacy. We're going to play some great hot tracks. We're going to let Miss Tony go ahead and read his bio, and then we're going to play something from his up-and-coming record label, and we'll take it from there. Go ahead, Miss Tony.
All right, Miss Lady. Freeway Rick Ross and Kathy Scott, better known as Freeway Rick Ross, and if you read the book, you'll figure out how he got that name. I'm actually reading the book now. It's really exciting.
Okay.
It's one of those rare figures whose experience as a drug kingpin has led him to a life of rebuilding a community in which he once helped destroy. According to the Oakland Tribune, in the course of his rise, prosecutors estimated that Ross exported several tons of cocaine nationally.
and made more than $600 million in the process.
Wow.
During the height, that's a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
During the height of his drug dealing, Ross was said to have made $2 to $3 million a week. Wow. That's a lot. In 1996, he was sentenced to life imprisonment after being convicted of trying to purchase more than 100 kilograms of cocaine from a federal agent. Ross became the subject of controversy later that year when a series of articles by journalist Gary Webb and the San Jose Mercury News brought to light a connection between one of Ross's cocaine sources, Danilo Blandon, and the CIA as part of the Iran-Contra scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. The decision in his case was brought to the federal court of appeals, where his sentence was reduced to 20 years and then reduced further to being a model inmate, and he was released in September 2009. The legacy he wants to leave behind is known as an inspirational mentor to people in need rather than the old freeway Rick Ross. He plans to make his life better for people around him and to continue to love his family.
Powerful, powerful. That is phenomenal. And, you know, to see him turn things around like that, I remember my dad used to say, you know, back in the day when you went into the prison system, they would learn how to do better crimes, you know. So when you hit the street again, you could continue on and keep the party going. But it's good to see that men like him are learning how to change that around and get a different type of image for, you know, inmates who actually go in and reform, you know, and change things around and do better things for their communities as they walk outside those doors. Aaron, we're going to go ahead and play his first track, which is, I think it's Smoke All Day. So we'll go ahead on and bring that in. Then we'll be able to bring him in when he comes into the studio so he can explain the journey that he has for literacy as well as music. Drop that beat, Aaron.
George Bush, I'm higher than a jet, I'm on the pedestal. No regs and no meds, give me the medical. I got my cheddar and plus I'm a veteran. The chronic is my doctor like Dre, that's my medicine. QB I had to get, my whole staff is lit. From Tampa Bay to Miami, y'all blew a half a zip. I got a case of crisps and a case of spliff. I grab the cushion, break it up like bad relationships. I have Rihanna fighting and have Britney looting. I hit the blunt and waste the exhale like Whitney Houston.
Smoking all day.
No, it's a Miyake, this kush is my cologne. I'm on that Cali perk, mixed with the mango. Blow out and smoking it, light up your whole Durango. I'm on that gas, man, I'm in my ash den. And your hood like insurgents, I'm on that Afghan. I know the loud stinky, it make the women kinky. I send them home walking funny with their eyes chinky. Whether I'm in Cali or burning in the south, that 93% is all I'm blowing out my mouth. I know you're feeling me, this Ike and Liggity. Just cop the zip with that purple, you know we finna be.
Smoking all day, got the tree rolled up, a la kush was good. You had chillin' okay, roll a cohiba, a spark up, nigga. Smoking all day, got the tree rolled up, a la kush was good. You had chillin' okay, roll a cohiba, a spark up, nigga.
Yeah. Liggity, we got a hit, baby. Ike Beezy. RRMG. Much love to the honorable Freeway Rick Ross, the original.
right. That was those West Coast flames. That's what I'm talking about. I was excited.
Right.
That was on point. Yes, yes, yes,
I
yes,
get some
yes.
good music.
Smoking yes, all day.
I was jamming. I was ready for the next track. I was waiting for it to go to the next one.
You know, that's my joint right there.
Absolutely. So go ahead, Miss Alicia. Bring the real Mr. Rick Ross into the studio.
Okay. We also have, I think it looks like they're both in the clubhouse as well.
Wonderful.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It's Rick Ross.
All right. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
Oh, man, phenomenal. I am Nene Capri. We also have Mr. Aaron Bebo, Miss Tony, and the fabulous Miss Leisha, who's been working close with you for this interview. We thank you so much for taking time out your busy schedule to sit down with us so we can get to know the man behind the pen.
Without a doubt, without a doubt.
Great, great, great. Now, you have your journey. As we have talked about, we know a lot of people highlight, you know, different things about your career. What we want to highlight definitely tonight is literacy and music and the arts and the things that you're doing within the community to rectify and correct some of the wrongs that you left behind. What are you doing currently with literacy and the arts to help uplift your community?
Well, as far as the literacy goes, you know, I'm traveling the country right now and speaking to people about what I've been through and how literacy affected my life and that you can't be embarrassed if you can't read, you know, because there's a lot of people out here that can't read, and just because you can't read don't make you a bad person. But it is bad if you don't start trying to learn how to read, and I believe that once you start making that step forward, you can definitely change that from a negative to a positive.
Yeah.
But the biggest and most important thing today that I believe that I've done toward literacy and just making the world a better place as a whole is my new autobiography.
Okay. Okay, and what can we look forward to within that autobiography for our
listeners? Well, you know, basically what I did in that autobiography is I'm taking you on a ride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically it's like you getting in my car with me one day and you ride around with me and you get to see everything that I saw.
Okay, all right. Is that some of the phenomenon behind you adding Freeway to the Rick Ross title?
No, you know, people been calling me Freeway Rick for a long time. But, you know, to have my name hijacked
right.
By Universal and Warner Brothers and William Roberts, it kind of made it necessary to separate myself from them by adding the Freeway title to it.
Definitely.
Okay.
Now, you talked about – go ahead. You go. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question, Rick. As far as concerning the name jacking or whatever, who do you hold more responsible? Because I noticed you said Universal and Warner Brothers before you mentioned William. So I want to know who did you hold more responsible in the midst of it first going on?
Well, you know, I believe that those labels are more responsible because they've been through this for many, many years and many times. So I know that they've dealt with this type of problem before and they know, you know, they know more than the rapper did. You know, the rapper knows now, but, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt, he really didn't know when he first got started about hijacking names and stuff like that there. He knew that the name was going to be beneficial to him, but I don't necessarily know that he knew the technicalities behind it and the laws and so forth.
Exactly, exactly. Now, you have this new project, and Kathy is a part of this project. Is she on the line, Leisha? Is she live as well?
Yes. Yes, she is. Okay. Let's bring in
welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I can expand, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. If I can expand on what Rick said a little bit.
Yes.
You know, his name was not only stolen, but his persona, his who he is, was stolen, and that's I think that's what that's kind of what the courts are going to have to decide. But you know, and I think as far as the literacy thing goes, this is a guy who went into prison illiterate, you know, and taught himself how to write, and he has now written it's an incredible story. Nobody's ever done a book like this. I'm proud to be a part of it. That is a behind the scenes look at the day to day goings on of not only where he came from, but what he was doing, and then how he pulled himself out of it. Because you know, he pulled himself out of selling drugs before they got him on a sting, lured him for, you know, it took him like a year to get him. But so I think that speaks volumes for him. Here he is. Look where he came from. He grew up in the ghetto. And he's just written a phenomenal book, and I did write it with him.
Excellent. That's awesome. And we thank you for believing, you know, in him and believing in his project and helping to bring, you know, literacy and the light to, you know, you have, you know, tons of men who are behind the prison wall who are not able to read and write. Aaron spoke about it before, reading letters for inmates and writing back, you know, to their family members for them because of, you know, the illiteracy that falls into the prison system. I know personally working with inmates that now they're cutting out school and different programs, especially if you have a long period of time to do. They're not even letting inmates do things when they first walk into the doors because they have a long system. And time,
well, you know, he utilized the law library, and you know, and an inmate made some flashcards. It's all in the book, but he, you know, he did all that on his own. But you know, if you know Rick Ross very well, you know, and he's heard me say this before, but you know, he never has a bad day. So he's, you know, the glass is half full. So, you know, he got in there and got in there, and it's like, what can I do? Aside from the, you know, it opens with the you know, life sentence he got, and that's about as bad as you can go. But yet he picked himself up, dusted himself off, and got on with it, and taught himself. And it was because of what he learned that they were able to turn his case around and get. They didn't turn it around, but they were able to resentence him, and then he got out much sooner. So, well, he wanted to have gotten out. So he, you know, he did all that himself, and he was motivated. And it's, you know, so I think that if you look at who he was and where he came from, you know, growing up, it's amazing. His life is amazing. It's a fascinating read, it really is.
I can't wait to get into it. I'm excited. Go ahead, Aaron.
I want to ask, in the process of you and Rick writing this book, which I'm just assuming that he probably was giving you most of the information, you were critiquing it, a lot of it, or whatever. I don't know what the process was.
Well, he kind of did stream of consciousness writing,
yes,
you know,
I'm
for years,
with that.
And it wasn't organized, and so there was a lot of fact-checking going on. There was a lot of, you know, was this business? Was it, what street was it on? And I did a lot of interviews. There were a few pages lost along the years, right, Rick?
So yeah. Uh-huh.
There were some holes to fill in. So I interviewed his mother. I interviewed his brother, cousins, some homeboys he grew up with, some guys who were on the street with him. Spent a day going around the hood with him, which I covered the Rodney King riots. So that was the first time I was back on Normandy Avenue. So it was a kick for me because it's very real there, you know. And so I'm a journalist. So I did cover that back in the day, but what, 90, 91, whatever it was. And the Rodney King verdict. But he's very descriptive, and that's one thing. You know, thank goodness he was, because the details were just phenomenal. And so I did have to fill in some holes. You know, there was a lot of rewriting going on, but he's an incredible storyteller. We did a lot of interviews too, didn't we, Rick?
Yeah, we did. We did.
I interviewed him a lot, and we talked 2 and 3 times a day. So I did a lot of filling in you know, details and, you know, verifying names. And there was, and I went through the court cases too, because the last chapter or two is about the court case and the whole Gary Webb thing that you guys mentioned, the journalist at the San Jose Mercury News who first broke the story about the Iran-Contra connection. And he's the one who informed Rick in prison. So he's a phenomenal storyteller, and his story is just, I mean, some of the stuff that happened to him in his life, you can't make that stuff up. It will knock your socks off when you read it.
So
wow.
Let me ask you, coming from a crime fiction background, how much of this content to you was like really, really eye-opening as you were gathering it and going through the process of rewriting and interviewing Rick and just going through the process of getting, how much of it was mind-blowing for you?
Oh, I'd read some of the raw notes, you know, some of the raw, you know, that were written down over the years by him, and it's phenomenal information and dialogue. I turned it all into, there was dialogue, but it needed to be organized. I would call him and say, are you kidding me? This really happened? I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, you're not only in the back seat with him when you're reading this book, you're at the driver's seat, because this is stuff that nobody's ever covered. We all read the news stories. We all read the magazine pieces that, you know, there's a drug raid that goes on and you get the police angle. Oh, my gosh, this was, I mean, you're riding high. He's running from the cops. They're shooting at him. And it's on, I mean, you're there. You're, like, in the moment there. It's mm-hmm. incredible. It's amazing he's alive. It really is.
Absolutely. Rick, I have a quick question for you. I saw you do, I think it was a piece that they showed on the TV network, and one of the main things they were saying about you, that you're very low-key, real laid-back. It was hard for them to really pin down anything you were doing because, you know, you kept things to yourself. And now you're able to turn all that around and attract people to literacy using that. The urban fiction gets a bad name sometimes because they say we glorify it because we write about a lot of the things that you actually did. How do you feel about that, using that period of time in your life to now bring people's attention to literacy?
Well, you know, what I look at is that when blacks do it, it's glorifying, but when Universal and Warner Brothers and Sony does it, it's a movie.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
You know, it's always the double standard, and I believe it's the fact that they don't really want us to profit off of the things that we went through in our lives. And when you read the book, you will see some of the things that I went through in my life that made me feel that society didn't want us to experience some of the better things in life because we were black. And that's one of the reasons that I locked in the drug so hard and so heavy, because I felt that drugs was another one of those things that they wanted to keep away from us.
And it doesn't glorify, the book doesn't glorify what he does. It really is, it's a part of history. It happened. He was this big drug kingpin, and there was a drug lord who was tied to the DEA and the CIA, and he didn't know it. So, I mean, that's a part of history. So it's he's retelling his story. I mean, he makes no excuses mm-hmm. for what he did. I frankly believe in seeing, I mean, I was mortified that the Los Angeles school district, first a private school, and then, you know, after that, which he got expelled from for, I don't know, sticking up for somebody in a marble deal. The Los Angeles County system just pushed him through every single grade. He sat in the back of the class, kept his head down, didn't cause any trouble, and they passed him on and passed him on. They did him a huge disservice, and
wow.
he saw no other way out. The only way he could make money was when somebody introduced him to drugs. He's like, okay, I can make a living off of this. He didn't have a lot.
And you know, Kathy made a good point, and it's not just me that they did like that. There's a lot of guys. You know, 65% of the people in prison can't read.
Yeah.
So
prime example of the system failing totally.
That is.
I think a couple of weeks ago I was at a school speaking, and the teacher said now that if you're in the third grade and you can't read, then they automatically start building a prison for you.
Exactly. They have a test. Yeah. It's actually a test that they're giving young black children in the school system, which determines whether they'll build another college or they'll build another prison.
Oh, my God.
That's all
so
real.
Horrifying.
I'm telling
that's
people
so
that
true.
All the time, but it'd be just so far ahead of they thinking that they can't see it.
Ms.
Yeah,
Tony?
That's so true, because here in Michigan, they passed some sort of new thing that starts, if third graders don't pass the exam that they give them, they call it the meet here, that they don't go on to fourth grade. And they just passed that.
Mm-hmm. And no matter what they got all year round and what they did all year round, if they take that test and they fail, then they don't pass them. But then they have laws for the eighth graders, and as they're going into high school, like, you can't stay back at all. No matter what your grades are, you have to pass. They cannot keep you back a grade. So, yes, they're doing our children a big disservice with that No Child Left Behind and all of that. They're pushing them along. They're teaching test material only. And our children aren't learning phonetics and basic mathematic formulas so that they can be successful in the world. Go ahead, Ms. Tony.
They just want it for statistics, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Tony and Kathy and Rick. Welcome to the clubhouse. Trying to listen, and I'm not trying to listen because I'm actually into your book and I'm into your first day of high school. So I'm trying to hear all the giveaways.
First day of high school.
Yes, I'm up to his first day of high school, and he's been ready to go for his tennis practice. But I just want to say I'm enjoying the book. I really am. And it's like I'm going on a journey with him and with you as his co-pilot. And the story is so phenomenal, and the details are like I can see it in my mind. I love to read, but I always have a picture in my mind as I'm reading. And you literally take us through a day in your life. So I'm really enjoying that.
Thank you. Well,
thank
I think it's really a snapshot, and it's live, and you do. I mean, it's very cinematic, I think. But you know, thank goodness he jotted down so many details and so much, and his friends helped bring it to life too when I interviewed them. But it's very street, as I like to say, just very street and very real.
Yes.
You know, I had a lot of time. I had a lot of time to do that. When you lock down 23 hours a day, you know, you get a lot of time to reminisce about your past life.
Absolutely.
But you feel each page as I go along. I felt the loss of your brother when you were 3.5 years old. I felt the loss.
Yeah.
You know, I used to play marbles, so I could see the marble game going on. So it's a good visual for those that just a book. You'll enjoy it. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Ms. Lisa.
I'm enjoying it myself. I had to read the book, you know, but that's for pleasure. But I have to do my research too. And I was watching this documentary, and your mom was on there talking, and she was talking about, you know, when he first started getting in trouble, and you actually didn't really start getting in a lot of trouble until you were 19.
Yep.
Yeah, he stayed
that's
out of gangs. He never joined up.
Yeah, that was basically when my tennis career was over.
Yeah. Okay.
Now you have a documentary coming out in October. Tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the documentary is called Cracking the System, and it's going to detail similar to the book, but not in as much detail. The book is in much more detail. And the documentary is going to focus on some of the new stuff that's going on right now. And it's also going to focus more on the Iran-Contra, you know, what Bush was doing, what Reagan was doing, and other people that was inside of it. And what me and Kathy wanted to do with the book was really give people an experience that we felt they had never had. And that was to take a trip through the projects and you know, just see what it's like, you know, what the real is and not what, you know, the news is telling everybody and what the rappers are telling everybody. You know, they're getting the information second and third hand. So we thought that it was really, really important to
inform everybody about what's really going on, because I think that, you know, a lot of these crack laws and stuff like that are racially motivated, and I think that they should be changed. You know, they made black drug dealers out to be animals and lunatics, and I think that we're far from it. I think that we're human, that we have mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, and some of our people are on drugs as well, and we don't like to see our people on it, and we don't like to see anybody on drugs. But sometimes you make a mistake and you feel you have no alternative, and you turn the wrong way.
Definitely.
You got sexual molesters out there against children who get less time, you know, than somebody who sells drugs. It's just there's something very lopsided in the system.
And murderers too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me ask
yeah.
you a question real quick, Rick, about the book, concerning the book, because I'm listening and everybody's saying it's very detailed. It gives a real walk alongside you throughout your life and everything. Have you received any flack from anyone that feels like you shouldn't be, you know, speaking on your life? Like, you shouldn't be saying
anything.
Well, you know,
I get a little flack once in a while from people who feel that, you know, me being a drug dealer, that I shouldn't have been allowed to write a book, or that I shouldn't be allowed to breathe anymore. You know, that I should be taken out and executed.
Wow.
And we're going to get those. You know, those are the same people that went in and voted to make the crack law 100-1 when they had the evidence saying that crack and powder was identical drugs. So, you know, I deal with that the same way. You know, those are probably the same people when they started saying, you know, free the slaves, said that they was 3/4 of a man.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for the most part, it's been really, really well received, because it's just a moment in time, really, and like I said, it's a part of history. I think this book is timeless, and that it will be read and reread and reread over the years because it's so historical. But it's also about the life of one man and how he overcame obstacles. And yeah, he did some bad stuff, you know, but he's reformed. He paid his dues to society. He served his time.
Yeah, and it seems like people don't want to, you know, say that you can pay your dues to society. It's like, oh, no, you can never pay your dues to society, no matter how much time you do or, you know, what happens. You know, it's like, oh, you did this, so forever you owe society.
That's true. You got people coming over from other countries getting jobs before convicted felons.
Well, that's another way to make you a second-class citizen. You know, put a felony on it, and then you can be discriminated against. You know, cities now can tell me that I can't come to that city. You know, they've told me, well, you can't come here during the Mardi Gras, or you can't come here during spring break. You know, it makes you a second-class citizen now. You can't vote. You know, there's just so many privileges that once you catch that felony, you're not allowed to do anymore. You know, on your job applications, you have to put on the box, you know, that I'm a convicted felon.
They're doing a lot to try to block the box, but in retrospect, they can still have access to you and to your records. And, you know, if they look you up, they can definitely still find out and discriminate against you, you know. And it's good to see that you're able to share, you know, share your story and move about trying to change laws and try to change the mindset of people who think that a person cannot, you know, have that type of lifestyle and then turn it all the way around and make it better. You've also incorporated music, and we had an opportunity to listen to a phenomenal track before you came on. Could you give us a little bit about the artist and the journey that you're making into music as well?
Well, I believe music is very influential. It's another part of the arts. You know, a book is part of the arts as well. I believe that the pen is more powerful than the sword. So we're using art as a way to transform people's lives, because I don't know if you know, but when you get into the book, you'll see how influential the movie Superfly was on myself. So we're going to try to use the arts as a way to combat
all the things that, that our young people are getting into right now today.
Okay. And with everything that's going on, and like you said, them trying to block you from doing different things, are there a lot of different threats and things, you know, on you that it makes it hard for you to work, or you just work right through it because that's your mission regardless to what may come?
Well, you know, my biggest hindrance right now is being on parole.
Okay.
You know, I have a problem traveling. I know my book could be doing a lot better if I could come and go as I please.
Right.
And a matter of fact, you know, me and my PO had out a couple of weeks ago, and I explained to him that, you know, he may feel that he's hurting me by harassing me and keeping me pinned down, but in actuality, he's really stealing from society, because any time that he's spending his time harassing somebody that's not committing a crime,
mm-hmm.
and then there's somebody else out there who he should be supervising that's getting away with committing crime, then he really just cheated society. Not only did he cheat me, but he just cheated the people who's paying his check.
And he's out there on a book tour and just, you know, literally hitting the streets. And when you say, you know, the 10 is very powerful, thank goodness for Gary Webb when he broke that story, because he really, I mean, he put Rick in the national spotlight. Unbeknownst to him, all this was going on, you know, but thank goodness for Gary Webb, rest in peace. You know, for you know, a white reporter up in Sacramento, California, wrote it for the, you know, completely blew it wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And then his paper
Gary was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal, and he was very concerned with the way the government was treating its citizens. A lot of people don't know, but Gary is the one who stopped the forfeiture law that they had in place. They had a forfeiture law in place that if they pulled you over, and, you know, say the police say you had a joint in the car. Well, they could take your car and forfeit it,
yep.
and you never go to jail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They
yeah.
do that here in Nevada all the time, or at least they did a little while ago. And it's just stealing. It's outright theft.
Wow.
Gary Webb was one of the people who put a stop to that. And you know, Gary was just a phenomenal guy. I mean, in my opinion, you know, the world lost not only a great journalist, but just a person that fought for civil rights, you know.
Right, a humanitarian, yes, a great humanitarian.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he wasn't going to sit around and let nobody just take advantage of people,
mm-hmm.
no matter who it was.
It was a dangerous story for him to write.
Wow.
Yeah, Gary felt that just because you was in jail that didn't mean that you didn't have rights, and because you got caught with some drugs don't mean that, you know, that they should go and take your car, or because the cops say you had drugs. Because, you know, I had a car one time, and I didn't have any drugs in it, but the cops said I did, and they forfeited the car and kept it.
Yeah, and that's a heck of a chapter. Heck of a chapter.
Wow.
How he tells the
story.
Now, Rick. Yeah.
You were at, I want to say, Brown University, and we're talking about just the prison reform, but you had made a comment that they didn't want you to no longer speak and mentor because you were promoting drug dealing to kids. They didn't tell you that, did they?
That's what my PO said. He told my judge that she should stop me from speaking to young people because I'm spreading the wrong message.
Mm.
What did your judge say?
She told me to let me travel.
So spread the word, Mr. Ross.
Yes.
Yeah,
they were trying to hold a brother down.
I just saw another artist.
I love it.
I just saw another artist speaking about that, like maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago. He was talking about how his parole officers riding him. Same type of thing you're saying, how his parole officers riding him. And he's like, look, I'm entertaining. I'm trying to feed my family. I'm providing jobs for a lot of different people. Like, you know, get off. Like, you think you're doing something to me, but you're going to really, if I go to jail, a lot of people ain't going to be, you know, have jobs no more. And I swear, like 2 weeks after that, he got violated and he's in jail right now.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy. He made a blog saying that, and then right after that, boom.
That's crazy. They want you to do better, and they say, okay, get a job, do this, that, and the third. You say, okay, well, this is the career path I'm taking. They're like, no, you can't have that career path. But
and he
you
got
can't,
violated
right.
for his job, for entertainment, for the things he was saying, for doing his job, which is his job. Like, it was crazy.
Well, he's, Rick's very squeaky.
But they're not
going to
put me in
talking,
jail.
They're not going to put me in. Too high profile.
They got
to
keep
you away. The good thing about being on federal parole is that you do have a judge to have the final decision. You know, your POs can't just lock you up. They stopped that a few years ago because they found out that POs were just locking people back up for anything. So they
retaliation.
Down and,
mm-hmm.
They let judges make the decision. And you know, my judge and me, we go way back. She's the same judge that gave me my life sentence. And matter of fact, I go in next Monday to get my parole expunged. I
actually wow, very good.
Yeah,
on the
right.
same grounds that I just talked to you guys about, that they're basically wasting taxpayers' money. You know, why watch somebody that don't need to be watched?
He's been out 5 years.
Yeah.
He's only got a year to go, so he's been out 5 years. He's squeaky clean. He's a contributing member of society, and he just wrote this phenomenal book. And if anybody wants to buy it, it's on Amazon.
Yes, on Amazon. I'd like to ask you this last thing, Rick. You know, with the youth of today and the different things that you see going on with them and society saying that they're incorrigible, what type of message do you have for them? What do you want them to feel and know from your experience?
Well, you got to give them anything but that message that they can't do anything and that they're nothing, because once you keep telling somebody that, then they start to believe you. And they start to act out on those things. So we got to encourage them that they can do anything with themselves and that they're everything. You know, I think the message is totally the opposite. You know, with kids, I encourage them to do whatever in life that they want to do and not encourage them, you know, and not beat them down with what they can't do, because, you know, none of us are perfect. You know, there hasn't never been a perfect person that lives on the planet. Even Jesus Christ, he wasn't perfect. And no disrespect to anybody else who might disagree with that, but there's never been a person on the planet that has been able to accomplish everything that they wanted to accomplish in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, that we have to look at our kids and what they do good and what they're good at and encourage them to continue to do those things and to be the best that they can be at what it is that they feel that they want to do with their lives and not beat them up for the things that they can't do. Because a lot of times, you know, we beat our kids up. And even in our schools right now, you know, the way we teach schools in general, you know, in a lot of countries, they don't make their kids take everything in school.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that they're not going to be working at everything. They let them find something that they're going to specialize in.
Yes.
And let them focus on those things. And that's why a lot of these countries are beating us out, because their people have been focused on just this one niche area of life, and they mastered it. And with us, you know, our kids can do everything, but is not really good at anything.
Yes, and you're absolutely correct. I mean, if they were able to keep those passions burning, most children from really small, they're dressing up and they're playing the role of what it is they want to be and do, and society and the school system beats that right out of them, you know. Then they wait till they get 18 and say, so what do you want to be when you grow up? Okay, I've spent 18 years with you telling me what I should be. My passion has changed, it's gone, it's deteriorated, so now I don't know what to do with myself. So, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, tonight is a special, special, special Right and Royalty edition of our show. We have the real Rick Ross in the studio. We also have Miss Kathy. She is a phenomenal, phenomenal author. We're going to read off some of her titles so that you can go and one-click her work. Definitely one-click his new title. I am Nene Capri. We have Aaron Bebo. We also have Miss Tony and the fabulous Miss Leisha. We're going to play your next song before you leave the clubhouse, and we want you to walk us through a little bit of what that song is about. Leisha, what's the other song that we have for Mr. Ross's music group?
Yes, the other song that we have is year. Is it year round?
Yes.
Rick Ross Music Group. Man, listen, man.
Yeah, Psycho, you got my headphones right. You pop champagne on this. Lil' Ma, you know, it's Evolution Records right here, baby. And I'm Blaze Calm, but you might as well come out and get with it. Tell them names to get lost, you know? Think less about me, more about us. No more games, I'm more about trust. More about love, care less about lust. And I never care less about us. Commitment is some feeling we need to discuss. A couple months together ain't enough. A minute for the long haul, like you call trucks. Sweatpants on and your hair all up. A formal wear on and you all dialed up. Inseparable, what they all call us. True that I'm a dog, your name's on my collar. Have you ever made love on $1 million? Before. Girl, girl, listen. Girl, listen. Girl, girl, listen. I know. Listen. Girl, girl, listen. I am what in the world you're missing. I know.
I wanna be around. I wanna be around. I don't wanna break up when the season's up. I wanna be still down. I wanna be around. So let it be clear now. No month, 2 months, you can sign me up forever. I'm
to me, you are blessed treasure by far. Protect you with my life, call me Knights and Blood. 365, wanna be where you are. I wanna be where you are. Wake up, wake up, wake up, baby. Daydreaming if you thinking we gon' break up, baby. Keep me feeling this way, we gon' make up, baby. You know how to make that soup, grandma make me. Phone is for your hands, soon and grandma make me damn. But my nana knows best. Run my fingers through your hair while you laying on my chest. Make me wanna eat you up, young Hannibal Lecter. Kiss you from your head to toe, not into my neglect. Love, cherish, honor, yeah, respect. The luxurious life, yeah, comes next. Find us, line G5.
Cause I wanna
test.
Be around,
yeah,
I wanna
back.
Be around. I don't wanna break yeah. up when the season's up. I wanna be still down. I wanna be around, so let it be clear. Forever I'm here now.
Look, yeah, no, I ain't going nowhere. No, not at all. My family in the frame is the picture on the wall. Your ideas, concerns, wanna listen to them all. Over a chill bottle, crystal. Winter, summer, spring, maybe even fall. Security net, we'll never let you fall. 2 mil in the vault, yeah, it's in the vault. I wanna be a recess, but you're in the vault.
I wanna be around. I wanna be around. Break up when the season's up.
I ain't trying to break up to make up, baby.
I wanna be around.
I just love putting my head on each other.
No month, 2 months, you can sign me up forever. I'm here now.
Just the scent of your hair makes me not care, you know what I'm saying?
Spring and fall, I wanna be there.
I just wanna be everything, baby. I wanna be in the recesses of your inner thoughts. Yeah. I love the way you do what you do, girl. So grown and sexy. Yeah.
That was powerful. I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to get that album when it drops. That was phenomenal.
I'm about to say that. Is this a mixtape or is this going to be an album for a particular artist? And how long do we have to wait? Will it be on iTunes as a single? Just let us know.
Yeah, that's my man, Glaze Conway. Yeah, he was just with me in Detroit hustling. You know what I'm saying? Out there selling CDs. I was selling my books. They were selling their CDs.
That's awesome.
It was crazy.
The same
it was
guy
crazy.
Did both of the tracks?
Huh?
The same guy did both of the tracks that we heard this evening?
No, those are two different guys.
Okay.
Yeah, one was Liggity and one was Blaze Conway.
Okay.
We got some talent over there.
Mm-hmm.
So how would people get in touch with Rick Ross for the entertainment side of things or the literature side? Are you
accepting submissions? They can get with Swab. You know what I'm saying? They can hit Swab up at 916-910-4134, or they can go to Rick Ross Music Group Facebook page. You know, they can get it there.
And
we ain't hard to find. So we're not hard to find. We out there, you know what I'm saying? And anybody trying to book me, you know what I'm saying, they can hit me up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And you know, my Facebook just got certified last week.
Saw that. I was like, oh, look at that. It had the little blue dot next to it. I was like,
and somebody
right.
told me that I had a picture to go viral, too, like a week ago. I did a picture holding a sign saying that rape is a crime, and
yes.
That picture went viral. Somebody called me last night and said it got over a million of views.
That's powerful.
Okay.
So what's next for you? Let the readers know what comes next. Do you have more books coming? Where can they see you at? Where will you pop up? Which city? Which town? Which state?
Well, I'm headed to Miami Thursday. I'm headed to Miami. Then I'm going to Kansas City. Then I'm going to Arizona. I'm getting ready to come to Indianapolis, Indiana. I just got booked for that today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming to Chicago, Milwaukee. We're going to do New York, Philadelphia. We plan on hitting the whole country. You know,
he's
we
on
got
a book tour. He's
books.
On a national book tour.
Yeah. Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be at in Miami?
I'm going to be in Palm Beach and Miami.
Palm Beach? Where?
I know
he's going to
hit. I know Club Dream is doing something for me. I think they're going to do like a small book signing for me at Club Dream. So we're going to be there for a minute. Going to stop by the University of Miami to speak to a couple guys on the team there.
Okay.
We're going to be out and about, man. We'll be at the swap meets, the barbershops, anybody that'll have us. We're trying to sell a million copies. Me and Kathy got to make this a million seller.
That's right.
Absolutely. And I'm going to add.
You're taking it right to the people.
Yes, that's
absolutely.
Right.
I'm going to add, if you make sure, I don't know, I'll call you or Suave, make sure you have those dates in those cities for me, and I can make sure that I promote them on social media so the people in those cities that are on social media are able to see that you're there, you're having a book signing, you bring your book, that'll bring them out too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can come out and get a picture signed. I mean, get the picture and get the book signed. Also, I'm going to be on a big TV show tomorrow with Jonathan Norton, I think that's his name. No, Jim Norton.
Yeah, it's a late talk show, and they were teasing that today, promoing it like crazy.
Yeah,
wow.
It's going to be big,
okay.
big. The show is crazy. The guy's hilarious. You got to check this guy out. The guy's hilarious.
And they had Mike Tyson on first, and now they're having Rick.
Wow. That's
what's
powerful.
Your Instagram so I could follow you, so I could find out where you're going to be at when you come down to Palm Beach, Miami, because I'm right in that area. So
Freeway Rick.
Come out and get a book.
Freeway Ricky.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah, bring some of your friends, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
don't
for
come
sure.
Come by yourself, bring a few people with you.
Yeah, yeah, and make sure that you post where you at so I could really go right directly to where you at.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal. Miss Kathy, could you please give our listening audience a little bit of your work so that, you know, once you guys are off the air, they can get to one clicking?
KathyScott.com. You know, also Amazon.com. Just search my name. You'll find me. And that's where you can find the Rick Ross book as well. It's on Kindle. It's on Nook. It's on it's in paperback. I wrote The Killing of Tupac Shakur too. You know,
wow.
That's out in third edition. Doing really well. But so the book is hot, and you know, we want to keep it hot. So we appreciate everybody's support in this.
We appreciate your support in the whole movement. And hopefully we'll see you as well on some of those book tours so we can sit down and be able to talk to you outside of this and, you know, talk about literature and the movement. And
absolutely.
We are very, 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 very.
She'll be back on the 27th.
I will
okay.
be.
You'll be back here on
the clubhouse to 27th. Yes.
Right? Yep.
I can't wait. I'm excited because we're going to just go to town. We're just going to go to
Thank
town.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
phenomenal.
You got this book, The Millionaire's Wife.
Yeah. Hit for Hire out of Manhattan. Yep.
That's powerful. Go ahead, Miss Tony.
I just want to know, do you think that this book will hit the big screen?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
my story has to be told. I mean,
it has to.
Man, this is going to be one of the biggest comeback stories in American history. It ain't many stories that have been through as much as I've been through. I mean, when you look at my life, man, you read that book, you can see that I've been through a lot of stuff. You know, people counting me out. Jesse Katz, one of the reporters for the L.A. Times, you know, he wrote my obituary in the Texas Monthly. And
are you serious?
Wow.
Yeah, man. He says in his article that he wrote last year in the L.A. magazine that he was writing my obituary because he had wrote me off. He thought I was through. He didn't ever think I was getting out. And
that's crazy.
Just this weekend.
And he predicted also that you'd be right back in, and you weren't.
Yeah, when I was in Detroit this weekend, you know, I also help Reverend Sheffield campaign for Congress. So, you know, another thing that I told him that I was going to be doing is I was going to be helping people get elected to office because I believe that we have to put in people in office that's going to back our views and support our causes.
Absolutely.
I definitely commend you, brother, because so many brothers do come out, and recidivism is so serious that so many brothers do go back, you know, and you came out, and you doing something very powerful right now. So I definitely commend you, and I'm wishing you nothing but great success along your journey, and I'm going to continue to follow it, for real.
Definitely.
You know, the system is set up for us to come back. You know, you get out here, there's no jobs, then you get POs that don't like you. I mean, what do people expect?
Yes, definitely by design.
It's set up by design.
Because it's a paycheck, you know what I'm saying? It's a constant paycheck. So you also have, you know, people now doing the private prison system where, you know, you have people who can walk right off the street who have millions of dollars who are buying prisons. And buying into that system. I believe Michael Jordan is one of them. Bob Barker has been supporting the prison, what I call behind-the-wall slavery movement.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible.
It's a business, and it's no longer trying to rehabilitate anybody, get them back into – it's just strictly numbers and a business, and it's absolutely – and shame on the people behind it.
Definitely.
Yep. And the worst part of it is it's the kids that's at risk right now. Because they already got the plan set up. All these charter schools and all that is by design to be setting up certain areas for these kids to be going right to school to fill up these prisons that's going to be built by the time they get 16.
They're not even waiting. They have a school in Philly that if you get kicked out of the regular public school, they send you to that particular school. I forget the name of it, but it has a jail at the bottom.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
so it's like you go upstairs. If you're a little bit more irate upstairs, you go right downstairs to the bottom that they have a jail set up for the juveniles.
It's like Monopoly. Yeah. Go straight to get jail.
Yes.
Right. They want you to see that. They want you to see that. That don't even mix in a place of education. You know what I mean? So they want to expose you to that so you can get used to seeing that and feeling like you belong there. Like, so when they put you in jail, you just going down to that cellar. It's the same thing.
Horrible. Yeah.
We got a lot of
work.
It's up to people like us to put a stop to it.
Yes.
For real.
Absolutely. We got a lot of work to do. But the children are waiting for you, Rick, you know, because you speaking from their experience. You're speaking from their lived experience. A lot of people don't understand, you know, where we come from and what we have gone through. It's a whole different life and culture. And they're waiting for you. They're waiting for somebody to show up speaking their language. You know, all the rest of the things that a lot of people are saying with the stuffy shirts and the ties on, it sounds like foreign language to them. But when you show up and you're speaking their language, something that they know and that they're comfortable with, you'll be able to save them. And we just hope that, you know, you drag us along whenever you can so that we can be a part of the movement, you know, continue to post and say where you are, and we would love to show up and help in any way that we can.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right, I appreciate it, and I'm there. I'm going to show up.
Yes.
That's why me and Kathy wrote this book.
Yes.
And continue
I
to
love
educate.
Coming out eating.
Yes. That's right. Continue to educate, not
you
just
so
the youth.
Much.
But the grown-ups and the adults, educating them on the system and the politics and how everything is working. Because you, a lot of things that you talk about, some people don't even know. They don't even realize it. They go in or they pay their taxes or they go and vote, but they really don't realize, like, the back end of a lot of things that you're talking about. So you're not only educating the youth, but you're educating everybody.
They had a whole task force made up of county, city, federal, whole task force to get him for years called the Freeway Rick Task Force, and they couldn't get him. Amazing, all that money to go into it. You know, it's amazing, and they still couldn't get him, you know, but it's all that energy, you know, but it's a hell of a book, heck of a book.
Wow. Powerful. That's powerful. We thank you both for coming out, for joining us. We know that your time is tight. You're traveling, and you took time out to come here and speak with us. This is your house. So if you ever want to come back at any time, introduce your works or any of your artists or anyone, you know, that you would love to highlight, please, please, please do not hesitate to contact Leisha and let her know, hey, I got something I want to highlight on the radio, and we'll put it up there. And we thank you for coming and joining us.
You guys are great.
Yes,
it's been
thank
fun.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
we'll see you soon,
Scott. All right.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Have a great one and travel safe.
Yes.
Have a great day.
Yes, indeed.
You
wow, this is powerful. This is a special, special edition tonight of Right and Royalty Radio. We had the real Rick Ross in the building sharing with us his new journey for literacy, for the arts, for music. He's traveling all around the country. Please make sure you are checking out his Twitter, his Instagram, his Facebook pages so that you can see where he will show up next. Miss Kathy Scott, phenomenal author, as well as, I'll say, historian, because she's covering the real cases. She's covering things that are going on in the communities, and she's helping get that word out there. She'll be back in the clubhouse in August, and we'll be able to sit down with her and really pick her brain and see how she's playing a great big part in this literary journey. We got Aaron Bebo. We have the fabulous Miss Tony and Miss Leisha. I am Nene Capri. And I'm happy to be in the clubhouse this evening. I learned a lot. That was really, really, really a great interview, and I learned a lot of things. How do you feel, Aaron?
Definitely, definitely a powerful interview. You know, like I said, you know, I'm glad that he's definitely free, and he's out, you know, doing positive things and talking to the youth. That's who, you know, we really need to be trying to reach, so... You know, I definitely don't want anybody trying to prevent him from doing that, because those are the ones right there. Like, sometimes adults be too far gone. You can't get them. So,
you're right. And it is like that. And it's a sad day because, you know, it's like you said, some of the adults, the people who actually are leading the children, are more closed-minded than the actual children. The children are like, you know, help me with this and help me with that. But they're so prejudiced with their ideology that they can't see a way to help the children. And then you have people who come along like himself who have gone through it, who can tell them what it feels like to lose your life, lose your family, you know, sit behind a wall and lose loved ones, you know, and they're able to give you the experience of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, even when you talk, Aaron, when you talk about, you know, being behind the prison wall and the things you experience, and you know how it can turn a man into an animal. You know, even when we had George Sherman Hudson on here, he talked about different things about a man finally coming to a reality that, damn, I have a whole lot of time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't take this suicide. They go crazy, or they force administration to put hands on them and then either beaten into submission. My father was an inmate for a lot of years. He did a life sentence, and they put them in a building in Trenton, New Jersey, called the Vroom Building for the what they would like to call the criminally insane. And he was blessed to escape some of the cruelties that they do. But he said he watched men be dragged off to electric shock treatments, you know, men who could read and speak very well, and because they didn't agree with policy or they spoke out, were drugged into rooms and given shots and pills and given those electro shocks that when they came out, they didn't even know who they were. They didn't know their name. They're now babbling, walking through the prison system, no longer can read or write or, you know, loss of body function, you know. So it's
that's real.
Behind that prison wall, and for a person to be able to come out, you know, Aaron, and still have their faculties and have their sense and write a book and then go out and speak, that's phenomenal. Some people may take it lightly, but I definitely do not. Go ahead, Aaron.
All that's real. Like when I was serving time in 1999, they killed this dude on Christmas Eve in Franklin Correctional Facility in New York State.
Wow.
Killed them on Christmas. It was crazy. Like it was real crazy. Like beat them to death.
That's a trip. That's crazy. Go ahead, Aaron.
You all types of stuff going on behind the walls. Like you gotta have people out in the streets that care for you, and you can't have people out in the streets that care for you that's scared. Because a lot of times people be out in the street, they really don't know, because they don't know what's going on in jail. So they be thinking that, you know, like how Free Red Rick was saying, like, you don't have no rights, like, when you go to jail or whatever. And they'll be like, well, I can't do what you want me to do. You know what I mean? You can't have nobody like that. You got to have people that's really about to call, make some phone calls, put some paperwork in. You got to have people on the outside that's really, you know, ready to move with you if you planning on being the type of, like, any of that political, like standing up against the rules, like, nah, this ain't right or this ain't correct, any of that. You need somebody on the outside, because from the inside, they might kill you.
Definitely. And it happens every day. You know, it happens every day in those prison houses. And now with our youth, it's like going to prison is a badge of honor. And, you know, their favorite rappers are, one minute they're on the stage, you know what I'm saying, then they in court acting like they don't care. And then they in prison, they come out, and they like, you know what I'm saying, I want to be like Lil Wayne, or I want to be like so-and-so. I'm going to do some time so I can get my badge of honor. But it's no honor in doing all of that. You come home from a prison sentence, and you can't feed yourself. You can't work in certain places. You know, you can't move around like you want to move around. You know, you have a man telling you what you can do for the rest of your life. My father is a lifer. He has life parole. There's no getting off parole for him. So forever and ever, he's in his 60s. You know, he'll be 70 years old soon. So he still has somebody controlling how he can move. You know, he's an educated man. He was teaching men how to read in the prison. He turned his life around, you know, but he still can't go where he wants to go and do what he wants to do, because they will forever have control of his movement. Go ahead, Leisha.
I was just going to just agree and reiterate, because Rick actually spoke at Brown University, and he talked about the cost. And he said they're like 600,000 nonviolent offenders in jail for like 20, 30, 40 years. And really, they're kind of just making money off of them, but it costs a lot of money just to house them. And a lot of them have their master's and their bachelor's. They have been reformed. And like he was saying, when he was speaking, they should be allowed to go home, because you've done what your job was to do when you sent them to prison the first time. You needed them to be reformed and learn a lesson. So now that they've learned their lesson, you're just going to hold them there and just, like, what, collect the tax check that comes along with them, when you can let them go out into society and be productive, because they're able to be productive now.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's just obvious, man. Like, you can see somebody getting, like, 36 months for a $20 rock. Like, when does that add up, when it's going to cost $40,000 a year to keep them in there? Like, $120,000 for $20? Mm-hmm. Like, taxpayers should be screaming murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But if they don't know, you know what I mean? But as long as, and like he said, the media, not going with what the media done told them, or mm-hmm. like how, you know, Kathy was saying, we heard the detailed reports from what the cops and all these other people put out. Like, when you really seeing it for what it really is, like, taxpayers could really just really know, like, yo, look, what? I think
mm-hmm.
it's got 3 years. I'm about to end up paying mm-hmm. $120,000 because he was trying to sell somebody $20 worth of crack.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. I'm totally against that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And then you just let the rapists out.
They'll have to change the laws. They'll
right.
be forced
right.
to change the laws. But if you got criminals, so-called criminals or so-called ex-convicts, and just a few little lobbyists going around saying, hey, you know, you need to change these laws. It's unfair. They're going to keep doing it because what they're going to push in front of the people is, hey, these people are tearing down your neighborhoods. These people are a menace to society. These people are this. These people are that. So when they're pushing that in the forefront, you know, it's going to keep the laws the same so they can keep getting that money.
Mm-hmm.
People got to wake
right,
up
and
start questioning
like
stuff. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
people got to start
yeah.
questioning things like, yo, why are we locking these people up again? For
no,
real?
No.
Like,
oh, then they
want to
tell us, Aaron, we're in a recession, though. We're in a recession. We can't afford to do a lot of things. Well, if we stop wasting money on certain things that we're putting money into, maybe we may have a little bit more money for education or for this or for that.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make any sense that you're spending all this money on a reformed person, not somebody that's going to continue to get in trouble, but somebody that has shown you that they're reformed, they're able to function in society, they have their masters, they're able to reach back and educate and rebuild the communities that they destroy, and you're just like, okay, well, we need you for like 25 more years. Okay, well, you got them for 40 years on drugs, so now they haven't sold drugs in like 40 years. So you're going to continue to punish them.
Right.
So you can get that tax check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
right. Right.
There's a lot of money in prison reform and reentry, you know, because that's one of the things that we do, but they won't put it into prison reform and reentry. Each prison gets a lot of a certain amount of money for prison reform and reentry, especially on the ground level where we go into the prisons, which is the transitional phase where they're coming out and they're right at that phase where they're going to the halfway houses or they're going to be going right to the streets. And what I have witnessed since I've been doing this since past 08 is that they'll get those funds, but they'll bring in other things, like they'll bring in the church programs that'll come and talk about the Bible. They may bring in a GED program, but the actual prison reform where you're mentoring them and you're giving them these programs, they won't do it. And if they do, they want somebody to come in and volunteer. Like, we volunteered at the prison for 3 whole years without pay, going there three nights a week. And they were happy with that program because then they could take the monies and do whatever they wanted to do with it. But they did not want to pay us for the program. They kept praising us. Matter of fact, our program, Prodigal Sons and Daughters, was a mandatory program at Bo Robinson Treatment and Reform Center for the men and the women. Mandatory. As soon as they came in, their counselors told them that you have to take this particular class because it was keeping the inmates calm. It was teaching them. It was training them. They would come in and say, I'm so happy I had anger management with you yesterday, Ms. Nene, because I was able to control myself. I almost got into a fight or argument. So they saw what we were doing was very beneficial to the system, but they did not want to put the money into the programs. Well, you know, we eventually had to stop going because everybody's life is all over the place, and now we're trying to, you know, rebuild our program and put it in more places, but they don't want to spend the money on what it should be spent for. And you know, then they want them to keep coming back. Like, it's a revolving door. I've seen it so many times. Women get to the halfway house, and then they violate them for something as simple as they bought a lotto ticket or, you know what I'm saying, they something so small.
Yo, I got the
crazy. Go ahead.
I got the simplest plan to fix mm-hmm. it so everybody could still be happy and the government could still get their money.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to do it like that and start letting these felons go, start opening up factories that only hire ex-felons and let them men continue to come out and work for equal wage for the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And still everything continues to run. Why keep them
yeah.
locked up and make them do it? They come
right.
home, they ain't got no jobs. So now you got the job. All right, look, we got all these different factories, these different offices, all the stuff you was learning in prison. We need y'all to fill these jobs up. These people are going to come home and work for equal wage. They were just working for like a dollar, 50 cents a day in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're giving them an equal wage of a regular, you know, person, a productive member of society. There it is. And productivity doesn't even slow down. You just don't got to lock nobody up.
Definitely.
Keep nobody locked up for forever.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people's problem when they come out of the prison system. Like we talked about and Rick talked about earlier in the show, you have that X to fill out. You know, so forever and ever you have that X on your back, the unknown, you know what I'm saying, in society. And they push you to a position where you can't afford to take care of yourself. A lot of men who end up going back, it's not because they wanted to. I mean, they didn't want to go back. They came out and they tried hard. You know, I have men talking about, man, for 3 years, 4 years, I've been trying. I can't keep a job. They find out my background. They fire me. You know what I'm saying? And then the parole officer is in your face like, get a job, get a job. And then they're struggling and they're trying, and society just won't let them up. It just won't let them up. They put a boot on their neck and make it so that you're going to be a forever prisoner. This is crazy. Tonight is the Right and Royalty special edition. We came on here on a Tuesday night because we had the real Freeway Rick Ross, also Miss Kathy Scott, phenomenal woman who helped him put out his new book. Make sure you go on Amazon and one-click that. We're talking about, you know, some of the problems in society with prison reform and reentry and what we need to do to bring these arts to our children, to help them do better in music, in literature, and art all the way around. We got Aaron Bebo. We have the fabulous Miss Tony and Miss Leisha. I am Nene Capri, and it's an awesome, awesome conversation that we're having here this evening. We're talking about the real problems in society and pretty much what they're building up to send our children. And we had some good talk with Kathy as well as Rick where they talked about building more prisons and setting up tests to find out what our children know and building, you know, around that and helping them to fail. How you feel about that, Miss Tony?
I'm sitting here listening, and I agree with what you said. And when they do let our brothers and sisters out, sometimes they still have that prison mentality, that mindset, and it
mm-hmm.
hinders their growth back into society. You know, they
mm-hmm.
still have that man down their neck, the parole officer, the
mm-hmm.
probation, and
mm-hmm.
they're not allowed to get back into society. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're not given a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that
prison mentality is still within them.
Yeah, because you live, if you've done 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years in prison, you have to have
mm-hmm.
a certain mentality to deal
mm-hmm.
with murderers and rapists and, you know what I'm saying, people who are trying to get over. And not everybody
mm-hmm.
is like that, but that's what you have inside the prison system. You have to have a certain type of attitude so you don't get shanked or you don't get killed. You know what I'm saying? So you
mm-hmm.
have that all day, every day, trying to survive and make sure you wake up, you know, the next morning, somebody's not too jealous because you get more visits or you get more trips to commissary, you know,
mm-hmm.
and like with Wahida's husband, he did 40 years in prison, 10 on paper, and he speaks about them feeding him glass, like, you know, like him not eating the food, like almost eating, and they, you know, it was glass in the food, you know, different things like that that happens behind the wall, which can change a person into an animal. And then you say, okay, now go back into society and be an upstanding citizen. You have to have training. You have to have reform, and you have to have programs set up. Miss Leisha?
Absolutely, absolutely. And just listening to all of this and then knowing that you have juveniles that they are actually charging and giving life sentences to at this point in time, you think about Nathaniel Abraham, I think that was his name. He went to jail at a very young age, at an age where he was moldable and reformable, but yet and still they just left him in that system for all of that time. And then now he has that mentality because that's how he was raised. You have children that are being raised in the prison system, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, you're giving them all this time when sometimes it just takes them someone just to step into their life and just mold them and show them that there is another way. you know.
Right.
And I'm very, very proud of Mr. Ross and his management company and his label, because they do. They reach out, they educate, they talk. I believe he was talking about opening up a youth center in his neighborhood he grew up in, because he was thinking of things that he didn't have or that wasn't in the neighborhood when he grew up. Now, so I think he started playing tennis at 12, and it was able to keep him off the streets and keep him out of trouble and allow him to go into the suburbs and experience different things and see how other people lived outside of his hood. But everybody doesn't have that opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
I'm glad that they are doing what they're doing, because there's a lot of kids that need that. They need somebody to build them up instead of break them down all the time. So, yes, mm-hmm. I applaud them.
Definitely. Aaron?
Yes.
How do you feel, Mr. Bevo? You know, definitely being a man who has walked on many different levels, as Rick was talking about, you know, going to school, trying to do some of the right things, being caught up in what we call the neighborhood trade, you know, and then spending time in prison away from your family, away from your son, who is now, as you have expressed, doing a lengthy sentence. And now you're trying to do a lot of different things to correct those wrongs. How do you feel about this, you know, this epidemic that's going on?
I just feel like it's really sad. Like, it's sad, and it's more so sad that, like, honestly, before a lot of people be pointing the finger at the government first, but a lot of times I think that we have to change our own state first before we can put a burden on other people. You know what I mean? Like, we have to reform ourselves. Like, if we, even though people be like, oh, but the conditions got people acting crazy, like, but are the conditions that crazy for people to be acting crazy to the extent that they are? Like, we have to police ourselves in some instances, and once we start doing that, you know what I mean, like, it'll keep the police out of our neighborhoods, because they won't no longer have to be there. The government won't have to be assisting people in the neighborhood, because then we'll have a community. The people, that it'll be a common unity amongst the people there. Everybody will be helping each other. The concept of borrowing a cup of sugar from your neighbor's gone, yo.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, like, if we start reforming ourselves and be able to get back to that, at least.
Yes.
You know, then we might have a chance at something greater. But if we can't get back to borrowing a cup of sugar from your neighbor, then, you know what I mean, all that's gone. I remember so much things have changed. Like, I sit around and think about the things. I remember the milkmaid used to come and drop the milk on the stoop.
Right.
Like, all that's gone. Like, all of these things are gone. And these were values, though. As they were going on, these were values of life that we got used to living.
Mm-hmm.
Now
right.
there's no value of life no more.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're
you
right.
I mean?
And when you look at that, how they're, you know, the police are rampantly murdering, you know, people, just pulling them over and just murdering them, you know.
Yeah.
Like, their hands are clearly up. They're yelling, I'm not resisting. You know, cops are fraudulating police reports, and then videotape is coming out later that a man didn't do a thing. I think the two-year anniversary, I forget the young man's name. I was just reading it. I should have recorded it a little bit better. But the two-year anniversary came up for the young brother who was handcuffed in the back seat and killed for resisting and fighting with police. But he was clearly handcuffed in the back seat when they found him murdered. And that's just crazy. You know, the older gentleman didn't make it home to his family a couple of weeks back in New York. I just watched a video in California. The man is walking away from the police officers. They got their guns drawn. Instead of them tackling them, tasing them, macing them, they shot the man so many times it was ridiculous. They killed him right there, you know, on the street. You got people videotaping this. I mean, I can remember, Aaron, when we were young in our hood, we knew all of the cops. And they walked the beat, and they sat down. I mean, I can remember cops
stopping and turning double dutch, you know, with us. And, you know, you actually knew them. You kind of felt safe. If something went on, it was cops. You could call it at their house and say, could you please come and help with the situation before they call 911 and it escalates. Like, it was crazy how time has changed. And now you're afraid to dial 911. And, you know, they show up and kill the innocent bystander while you're standing around watching stuff go down. You could have been the one called 911. You get shot because you were standing too close to what they thought the discrepancy was. So it is, man, crazy.
It's crazy, man. The cup of sugar. The cup of sugar from your neighbor, yo. That's the concept. If people could just get that simple concept planted into their head, then things will start running a lot smoother. But we have a caller.
Okay.
Let's take this caller real quick. 414-750, you are live in the Writing Royalty Clubhouse. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, what's going on, y'all? This is Swift.
Hey, Swift,
hey,
how
what's
you
going
doing?
On? How you feeling?
Hey,
Swift.
I'm feeling all right. Hey, what's going on, y'all? How's everybody?
Rick,
what's up, man?
Oh, man, we're just in here chopping it up, you know, talking about the real subjects that have things buzzing in our community. We had Rick Ross on here a little earlier, also Kathy Scott, who helped him write his book. And, you know, he's just trying to right some of those wrongs that he helped put into the communities. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I mean, you know, me and Rick, we're real cool. You know, we did a lot of things together, you know. I mean, I know he made some mistakes, you know, but he's a good brother, you know. And, I mean, I agree with him, you know, me being in prison before. So, I mean, I know how the system is, you know, It's a situation where, you know, we have to educate our kids. You know, we have to make them aware of what's going on. Like, you know, like people be sugarcoat stuff. You know, I don't care where you're raising your kids at, you know, you got to tell them the truth. And you also have to get them to understand what they up against. You know, especially, you know, if it's a child that's of color, you know, you have to get them to understand what they up against and, you know, prepare them just for life, you know, to be able to deal with all these things like that, and, you know, that way they can kind of, like, you know, weed their way around all that stuff. But, you know, I mean, I definitely agree with y'all. I mean, prison is a situation where it's like, you know, it's business now. You know, I mean, it ain't about, you know, helping nobody and putting nobody into no situation where they're going to come out and they're going to be a better person. You know, I mean, I know here in Wisconsin, it's strictly about numbers. You know, when prisons when prisons have, like, situations where, you know, too many people is getting out, you know, you can tell when I was in there, what they would do is they would stop giving people parole. I mean, and it would just be like, okay, well, you know, how is it that, you know, you sending people out of state to other prisons. You know, we don't have that many prisons here, but, you know, you contracting with private prisons to send prisoners there. I mean, why would you have somebody in a private prison? Mm-hmm. You know, why would you send somebody, you know, I'm living in Wisconsin. You're going to send me all the way down to Oklahoma. They had me all the way in Oklahoma in a prison down there, which was a private facility that was owned by the stock market, which we end up finding out later on that the governor at the time who signed the contract with these people, his wife had stock in this company. It's called Corrections Corporation of America, CCA. And,
wow.
You know, this was a situation where, you know, they just swept it under the rug. You know, I mean, you know, the media, a couple of media people, they covered the story and everything, you know, when they exposed it. Now, legally, okay, they didn't do nothing wrong because he didn't have no stock in it because, you know, he the governor, but his wife did. But, let's just be real. Let's speak from an ethical and a moral standpoint at this point. Okay, if your wife is investing in something, why wouldn't you want to do business with these people? Why would you want to see this fail? You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's like, I mean, I totally agree with y'all. I mean, that was just an example, you know, of just me being directly involved in seeing that kind of stuff, you know. And at the time, I was young. You know, I wasn't number 18 years old. I was a kid, you know what I mean? They had me all the way down there. You know, I'm around different people from different states. You know, I can hold my own, but it's like this right here. I mean, I seen a lot of cats that came down there. You know, we was in there with guys from Arkansas, Hawaii, Tennessee. You know, I know I knew guys that went down there, and you know, they got seriously injured, you know, to the point to where they had to bring them back here. You know, one dude is, you know, like, he has brain damage, you know, from just, you know, riots and all this stuff jumping off. So my point is, okay, now he went in prison for a crime that he committed. You know, he go down there and he went through all of this right here simply because of what? Just because they wanted to make some money off of him. That's the bottom line. I mean, you know, he didn't come out of there a better person. You know, he came out worse. He came out of there worse than he did when he went in. You know, so, I mean, that situation with that penitentiary stuff, you know, it's like a real area for me because I've been through it. You know, and, and you know, everybody always be like, well, you know, somebody committed a crime, they need to go to jail. And, I mean, I agree. You know, if someone, you know, gets caught doing something, I mean, you know, if you have to go pay for it, you know, okay, that it is what it is. You got to go do what you got to do. But at the same time, you know, people still got rights, though. You know, I mean, I don't care what you did. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I just wanted to touch on that. I heard Joe was talking. I mean, I was trying to get in here and get on and catch my homie, but I see he off the air now. So...
He's on his grind. He's moving along. So, you know, we're so happy that he was able to stop in, and we are blessed to also have you on our team. D Street has a phenomenal, phenomenal lineup of authors and publishers that are doing phenomenal things. And thank you for calling in and sharing your experience with our listeners. They're enjoying the show. I'm getting text messages and inboxes of people who are listening, and we thank you for calling in and sharing that because you brought it right home. What we were talking about all night, you came right on and brought some light to it. So we thank you for your contribution this evening.
Indeed, no problem. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Swift. Have a good one. Here if you need us.
Yes, indeed.
All right,
thank
y'all
you.
Keep doing what y'all doing. All right.
Thank you.
Tonight is a special edition of Right and Royalty Radio. We're in here in the clubhouse chopping it up. We had the wonderful turnaround artist, as I would like to say, Rick Ross. He was in the building. He's doing phenomenal things with literature and the arts out here, you know, speaking in universities and speaking to our children, trying to help them either save them from going where he's been or turn them around once they've already been there. I am Nene Capri. We got Aaron Bevo, Miss Tony, and Miss Leisha. We're talking about the things that some people are afraid to discuss. Miss Tony, you, like we always say, you have two sons. You've managed to direct and guide them, you and your husband, on the right track. But you know that any decision, you know, going to a party or anything, you know, they're in college, any decision could land you in a position where now you're visiting them at a jailhouse. How does that feel, you know, to you as a mother raising two young boys?
It's a subject close to my heart because, like you said, one of my sons is away at school, you know, and you always hear about these college parties and things that happens on campus. And no matter how much you talk and teach your child, once they go out into the world, it's something totally different.
Yes.
You know, you just hope and pray that what you have instilled in them comes to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they have to do certain things in order to learn what you always try to teach them. They have to be in the situation and see how they handle it in order for it to sink in what mom and dad has been trying to teach them.
It's a
constant concern, you know. No matter where you are in the country, you have to be worried about when your child goes out into the world.
Definitely, even if they don't make the choice, standing around, you know, watching something else go, like, you know, they could all be out having a pizza, and then one of their friends who doesn't have that perfect home training gets irate. You know, then the cops show up, and they're macing and shooting everybody and taking everybody down, and it could take you a long time to even clear your good name. Like, I was just sitting there eating a pizza. One of the ladies in the financial aid office, when I was bringing my sister in to start college, you know, she had told her to be careful, you know, who you deal with, and be careful with going back to friends. She said her nephew went away to college. And he was away, and he was away for a while. And when he came back, he ran into a friend he had before he left. And now his mentality is of, well, darn, I've been gone, and I've changed. You know, he's not thinking about what they've been doing at home. He goes out with them. He goes to a party.
they get into something, and because the police were watching the friend building a case against him, and when they finally busted him, they were together at going out that particular evening, and it happened to be the night they were going to do the raid, and it took him months to clear his name. They had to send all types of paperwork from the college showing that he was not around. He hasn't had any contact. He's been away in school, but he missed months of school. He, you know, he failed classes because he was sitting in the prison trying to get his name right. So you have to be careful with that as well. You know, if you are changing your lifestyle and things, you have to be careful who you come back in contact with when you do come back around. You know, you've left. You don't know what's going on in the community while you're away. So that's definitely a good message, you know, to pass on to our young men as well as our young women. You have to be careful what you come back to. Aaron? It's Aaron and Hair and Makeup, because he tends to go down to Hair and Makeup. He could have very well stepped into the green room. I want to add to that,
Nene, because, you know, my son was in a situation, and you don't necessarily have to be that person. You could be around. You could be in the group, you know, and something goes off. And just this recently, he actually said, I learned my lesson. And we've been waiting for him to say that. You know, he saw firsthand what can happen when you're in a group and you're not doing the right thing. You know, and he finally said, I learned my lesson, and that was like music to our ears. So you don't necessarily have to be the one to initiate it. You could just be in that group setting, and something could just pop off, and you have no control over it.
You don't have, because you can't control anybody else's actions. You can only control your own. And, like, I'm so afraid now. My sister is, we about to go to Georgia. And she's like, I want to stay in the dorm and da-da-da-da. And I'm my head hurt, you know. I'm like, oh, Lord.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, and she's like, you know, she wants to experience some of the college experience, and I'm trying to school her. Like, she's so green because I've had my kids very close to me. I raised her, so I keep them with me. You know what I'm saying? And I pride myself in that. I don't care what nobody says. I pride myself in keeping them with me. Like, my daughter just started walking down the street to the park with my sister. She's 13. And I'm like, I'll drive you down there. You know, they looking at me like, come on, you are so lame sometimes. But I'm like, hey, I'd rather have you safe with me than out there. I'm sitting in the house with my nerves shattered because I'm like, oh, God, because stuff happens quick. You know what I'm saying?
It does.
Really, really quick. And I'm really nervous, you know, for her to do that. I see that the 16-year-old girl went to a party and they drugged her and raped her and put that on social media, you know. So now that's a stigma that she's going to carry for the rest of her life. It's crazy. I visited the prison, and I actually had a chance to mentor the son of a man who I ran with, you know, before he was even thought of being born. And then I look up. And he's in the prison, and I'm doing my mentor session, and afterwards I'm talking to him, and he was sucking his thumb while I was talking. And the whole time I'm saying to myself, this grown boy got his thumb in his mouth at jail. Do you know how nasty it is around here? This is what I'm thinking while I'm doing my mentor session. But because I hit on a couple of things and said where I was from, he came up to me. He said, so you said you was from so-and-so and so, blah, 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 and you know my father. Blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, so-and-so, he drove this kind of car, blah, blah. And I'm saying to myself, this is scary because your father barely escaped doing football numbers, and now his son, 20 years old, standing in the prison, and he's ill-prepared. You know, I'm saying to myself, he is terribly ill-prepared. You still suck your thumb. Like, what are you doing in prison? Like, you haven't even finished growing up yet. You're a baby. You know, and it's just sad that generation after generation is falling into this pit of prison and murder and death. You know, they're not seeing a life for themselves. They're not seeing past 21. You know, my best friend's son got killed a few years ago, and when I found out that he actually had tattooed his name with rest in peace on his arm right before they killed him, like, he knew that he was going. He didn't even, I don't even know if he made it to 20. If he did, he was just 20, 21. And that's scary. Our kids are growing up, a lot of them, with a death wish or with the idea of, I'm going to jail, I'm going to be murdered. And what type of future is that for our children? This is a special edition of Right and Royalty Radio. We've been in here talking about some issues that are on our minds, that are in our communities, that are on our hearts. We have Rick Ross in the studio this evening, also Kathy Scott, who's helping him do his book and with his journey. We got the fabulous Miss Leisha, Miss Tony, Aaron Bebo, and I am Nene Capri. So happy to bring these real issues to you. And Leisha, go ahead and speak a little bit on it. You have a young son. He's coming to that teenage age where you be like, oh, boy, you hope he's making the right choices and decisions. You hope that you and your husband are giving him the best, you know, that you have. You know, how do you feel about that?
Well, people complain about me because I keep him close. Mm-hmm. I'm like Nene. He can go outside, but I'm one of those, you know, you can't go everywhere. You got to be here and here. And when I go out on the patio, I got to be able to see you. If I can't see you, it's a problem, you know, but I mm-hmm. do it for a reason, you know, because there's just so much going on. Kids getting into so much stuff. And I think especially with boys, it's the when you got the kids doing it, looks exciting. You know, it's the rush of that excitement. Oh, that looks exciting. Let me try that out. You know, so I do. I try to, he always says, you know, Mom, you have all these long lectures that you give me whenever something happens. And that's true, but that's because I need him to know and understand, you know, what is going on. And, you know, even though you're 12, you know, life as you know it is kind of over. You know, the world is seeing mm-hmm. you kind of differently. Things in the world are different. You know, you think with a child's mind, but adults don't think of you as a child, and they don't even see you having a child's mind. They don't mm-hmm. know that. So, you mm-hmm. know, anything you do is going to be deliberate. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. You know, so I start with his friends, you know. Keisha, she calls in all the time. She says, you have to mother your friends, your children's friends. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always at the schools. I do the lunch and recess at the schools. And at first, he would be kind of embarrassed. But, you know, all his friends like me. You know, he got some friends that's like, Jonathan, your mom is just mean. And at first, I felt some kind of way. But now I'm just like, thank you. You know, I want you to remember that.
mm-hmm.
You remember that next time y'all go hang out.
That's crazy that you said that. Go ahead. I'll tell you the story. Go ahead.
Oh, because, you know, you see those kids. You know, there mm-hmm. are some that, you know, they get in a lot of trouble, you know, and it's not bad trouble, but it's like every time you turn around, they're in the office or something. And, you know, at one point in time, I told him you couldn't play with such and such, and he was like, well, why? And I had to explain to him, but he didn't understand. He was like, well, you know, everybody, you say everybody changes and everybody does this, and sometimes they're just missing something. What if they just need a friend, Mom? And then I'm just like, oh, now you want to listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it's funny you said that because when I lived in the back mountains of Pennsylvania, you know, they have the school buses that pick you up, like, right in front of the door. And the school bus would come and pick up the my sister, and then when they would drop off, the kids would be so rowdy on there, acting crazy. I could hear the bus driver, you know, trying to calm them down. I'm saying to myself, is this happening every day, you know, at the beginning and the end? Man, one morning I gets on the school bus before the bus could pull off, and I lecture everybody on there for about a good 2 minutes. I laid into them. I told them that they ought to be ashamed of themselves, and your parents mm-hmm. don't know that you're acting like this, and I don't want to see it. You know, I said, this man is trying to get you from point A to B safely. Y'all need to sit your butt on the seat. I mean, I gave them the business. And my sister said to me the other day, she said, I was so embarrassed. I said, but every time that bus pulled up from that day forward, they were quiet. They were quiet. They were sitting down, and then they would be waving to me, have a good day. You know, because every day I would put my sister on the bus, I would say, have a good day. I love you. Make good choices. I would say that every single day, and I would say so that the children could hear me. And they all used to be like, wow, like, you know. And she said, one of the boys, he wouldn't even talk to me no more. I said, good, because if he's on the bus quiet, he's not starting any trouble. So good. Glad he wasn't talking to you. She was like, I was just so embarrassed. I said, I don't care, because you're on here, and I have to make sure that you get to and fro safely. And if they jumping around acting a fool on the school bus, that makes that the chances less. You know, this is a bus driver trying to get y'all
from one spot to the next. It was stressing that poor man out. I got on that bus. I don't care. I will tell it. My daughter used to be like, stuff happens. She's like, Mom, let me handle it. You're going to make it worse. I'm like, I don't care. I'm still saying something. So I look it right in a kid's face. I'll bend down in their face and tell them, you're embarrassing yourself. I think you need to stop doing that, you know. And I think if you had not parents fighting kids and arguing with kids, I don't want to hurt anyone's child. I don't want anyone's child to hurt my child. But I think that if we get more involved and we speak up more and we have real conversations with not just our children but get involved with other children in a positive way, they feel like they have a support system. They feel like someone else cares about me. You know, everybody's parents are not the same. So everybody's parents aren't talking to them. But if they're missing that at home, but we're having conversations and we're trying to teach and share our experiences, I think that we can be some of the change that we want to see in our children and in our communities. Miss Tony?
I agree, because I think a child just wants to know that somebody cares, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're being reprimanded, they know that there's care there. Because if you didn't care, you wouldn't be saying anything.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So I think they just need to know that somebody cares about them, and that can make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. It does. And you'll be surprised at the type of impact you have. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, in the media, you know, we hear good news don't fly as fast. Bad news flies so fast. You hear when somebody does something bad real quick. But if they're doing something good, you don't really hear about it. You got to just see it somewhere online or somebody talking about it. But it doesn't spread very fast in the media. And to me, that's unfortunate because there are a lot of people that may have not made the right choices, that may have even made the right choices, but they are reaching back. You have basketball players and soccer players and, you know, football players. They all are trying to reach back into their communities, and you never really, you don't hear about it, you know. And I want to just shout out my boy, ex-NBA player, J.R. Ryder, because he had a rough career, but he turned it around, and he was in Springfield speaking at the NBA Hall of Fame and, you know, speaking to the kids and stuff. And I just thought that was really, really good that he was he's able to go back and, you know, just try to touch them, because a lot of times they go into these sports and these different careers and there's nobody there really to guide them, because the parents kind of don't know. The parents are still there, but they don't know like the ins and the outs, and you know, you got the agents that's just really trying to get some money. And so sometimes these athletes is out there by themselves just winging it, and they get into so much stuff, you know. And so it's kind of unfortunate. So it's good that at least athletes see that, you know, they see that, you know, we got some athletes coming up that's a little lost. We need to reach out to them and let them know.
Yeah, because Rick said he'll be speaking to some athletes in Miami this week, so definitely be looking at, looking at his page, following his movement. He's trying to be that change that we have in our society. And I'm going to leave our listeners on this note. I was talking to my daughter, you know, she's 13 with all her wisdom in the world, and she was talking about change. And she was saying, Mom, it's impossible for people to change the world. Each person has to change themselves. She said change is so great that it's silent. She said it happens every second. Some people change up, some people change down. She said, but you can't control change, and you can't control change in others. You only can control what you change and yourself. Tonight is a special edition of Right and Royalty Radio. Thank you so, so much for listening, tuning in with Aaron Bebo, the wonderful and fabulous Miss Tony and Miss Leisha. I am Nene Capri. We thank you, thank you, thank you, chat room and callers, everyone who supports Right and Royalty Radio. And, you know, we leaving the building. Good night, everybody. Leisha, go ahead and play one of those songs from Rick Ross's new album company, Drop That Beat. Good night.
Hi, absolutely. We will see you guys tomorrow when we have T.Y. Marshall and Destiny Henry on. Have a good evening.
Yes.
Ike Beans. Liggity.
Rick Ross. Music Crew.
We smoke all day. All day.
Smoking all day. Got the tree rolled up, but the kush was good. You mentioned an okay. Roll a Cohiba, a spark up, nigga. Smoking all day.
Man, I burn the best, I be blowing kush. By the way, your smell, you burning George Bush. I'm higher than a jet, I'm on the pedestal. No regs and no meds, give me the medical. I got my cheddar and plus I'm a veteran. The chronic is my doctor like Dre, that's my medicine. QB I had to get, my whole staff is lit. From Tampa Bay to Miami, I blew a half a zip. I got a case of crisp and a case of spliffs. I grab the cushion, break it up like bad relationships. I have Rihanna fighting and have Britney looting. I hit the blunt and waste the exhale like Whitney Houston.
Smoking all day. She rolled up and the kush was good. You matching and okay. Roll a Cohiba, the spark up, nigga.
You bring your own. Don't need no Issa Miyake. This kush is my cologne. I'm on that Cali perk, mixed with the mango. Blow out and smoking it, light up your whole Durango. I'm on that gas, man, I'm in my ash den. And your hood like insurgents, I'm on that Afghan. I know the loud stinky and make the women kinky. I send them home walking funny with their eyes chinky. Whether I'm in Cali or burning in the south, that 93% is all I'm blowing out my mouth. I know you're feeling me, this I can lick. Just cop the tip of that purple, you know we finna be.
Smoking all day. Got the tree rolled up and the kush was good. You matching and okay. Roll a Cohiba, a spark up, nigga. Smoking all day.
Rick Ross Music Group. Man, listen, man.
Yeah, Psycho, you got my headphones right. You pop champagne on this. Lil Mine, you know. It's Evolution Records right here, baby. And I'm Blaze Calm. You might as well come out and get with it. Tell them names to get lost, you know? Sing less about me, more about us. No more game time, more about trust. More about love, care less about lust. And I never care less about us. Commitment is some feeling we need to discuss. A couple months together ain't enough. A minute for the long haul, like you call trucks. Sweatpants on and your hair all up. Perform aware, I don't leave you out.